Om Ganita Minandasya Janandanasalakaya Chaksu Samritan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Mahavishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakalamayam Ladati Sapanandikam Vanchakopaturubhyascha Pripasindubhaibhacha Chaitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Dhruva Maharaj has just completed his prayers to the Lord after practicing austerity for so long. 6 months, but getting the most incredible fruit of those austerities, which was to actually have Sakshat Darshan, directly seeing the Lord with his very eyes. So when he saw the Lord, Lord Krishna Garbha, he offered prayers, and in those prayers he expressed how he felt himself very foolish, because the Lord, he said, was capable of giving everything, and yet the best or anything, he is the Lord of benedictions, because he who owns everything is capable of giving everything. So he is the supreme proprietor of the entirety of the universe and beyond, not only of the material universe, but of the spiritual world. He pervades everything. He is that Brahman, the greatest, who is everywhere through his impersonal energy. So he is capable of giving everything. He can even give liberation from death, which is stalking everyone and brings fear to everyone. He can give freedom from that. And Dhruva felt foolish, because on one hand, that which is most satisfying to every living entity is to be engaged in the Lord's pure devotional service. Without any desire, just to be engaged in associating with the Lord through hearing his name spoken through the mouth of pure devotees, through the lips of the pure devotees, associating with Krishna in that way, how wonderful. And yet, what did Dhruva ask for? Neither to be liberated from the shackles, the iron, cold iron shackles of material life and death. He didn't ask to be liberated from those, nor did he ask for to always be associated with his devotees. He wasn't praying for that. But what was he praying for? He was praying and hoping for a kingdom, a mundane, petty kingdom. So he felt very foolish. And therefore, in text 17, he says, "My Lord, O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet." So that is the highest. Just simply to worship continuously the Lord's lotus feet, wishing nothing other than that, no other end, nothing to gain by doing that, but simply doing that, worshipping the Lord, is sufficient. And then Dhruva contrasts that to his own, what he was feeling about himself, and he said, "To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causelessly merciful maintainer. just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. So I am ignorant, I'm just a boy, I may have had material desires, but just as the cow takes care of the newly born calf, similarly, you please take care of me despite my ignorance and despite my foolishness. Because I wanted a kingdom. So that was the last of Dhruva Maharaja's prayers. And he's begging for the shelter of the Lord with a very humble heart. And then Maitreya Muni continues to narrate this to Vidura. He says, "My dear Vidura, when Dhruva Maharaj, who had good intentions in his heart, finished his prayer, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, who was very kind to his devotees and servants, congratulated him, speaking as follows. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead said," this is Dhruva Maharaj, or the Lord's reply to Dhruva. "My dear Dhruva, son of the king, you have executed pious vows, and I also know the desire within your heart." So it's interesting. Dhruva Maharaj has gone to the Lord very determinedly asking for a kingdom. And when Narada told him, "Don't do that," he was determined and he kept focused on that one desire. And then he finally saw the Lord. Now, how is the Lord going to deal with him? Because by the time that Dhruva had seen the Lord, he had undergone so much purification. Purification means removing the contamination from the heart, the consciousness. That he saw, when he saw the Lord, and especially after being touched by the kanjal of the Lord, being purified by that touch, Dhruva no longer had his material desires, but yet he worshipped those with that in his mind. Now what will the Lord do? Will he give him his material desires? Will he not give him his material desires? What will he do? We'll soon find out. He says, "I know the desire within your heart. Although your desire is very ambitious," because Dhruva had wanted a kingdom that was greater than the greatest. Lord Brahma had a kingdom that was basically the universe, that was everything, and Dhruva wanted a kingdom better than his father's, better than Lord Brahma's, better than everything, bigger than everything. So he said it's very difficult to fulfill that, to have a kingdom bigger than the universe, "but I shall favor you with its fulfillment. All good fortune to you." Here's Prabhupada's purport. Now these purports are so nice. The Lord is so merciful to his devotee that he immediately said to Dhruva Maharaj, let there be all good fortune for you. So when the Lord wishes someone good fortune, what is going to happen to that person? He's only going to have good fortune. Because fortune herself, Lakshmi Devi, is always serving the Lord. So if the Lord is pleased with someone, Lakshmi Devi is certainly going to be pleased with such a person. "The fact is," Prabhupada continues, "that Dhruva Maharaj was very much afraid in his mind. For he had aspired after material benefit in discharging his devotional service. And this was hampering him from reaching the stage of love of God. Because if we desire material things, we can gain no access to the spiritual world. Because that material desire will keep us in the material world, naturally. So Dhruva Maharaj was upset and afraid that the material desire that he had harbored so tightly, held on to so tightly, that was going to keep him in the material world. So therefore in his prayer he said, 'Please, my Lord, you take care of me just like the mother cow takes care of her calf. I'm dependent upon you. I'm like a baby. I am a baby, practically speaking.'" So he was afraid that that would hamper his advancement or going back to Godhead, attaining the stage of love of God. In the Bhagavad Gita it is said, Bhogaishvarya Prashaktanam Taya Parita Tejasa. Next line. Samadhana Vidyate. The one who has material attractions, Prashaktanam Taya Parita Chaitasam Vyavya, he can't be focused in his desire, and therefore Krishna reciprocates with that. Samadhana Vidyate. So it was true that at heart Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom that would be far better than Brahmaloka. This was a natural desire for a Kshatriya. He was also only 5 years old, and in his childish way he desired to have a kingdom far greater than his father's, grandfather's, or great-grandfather's. His father, Uttanapada, was the son of Manu, and Manu was the son of Lord Brahma. Dhruva wanted to excel all these great family members. The Lord knew Dhruva Maharaj's childish ambition. But how is it possible to offer Dhruva a position more exalted than Lord Brahma's? But really, by saying all good fortune to you, he is erasing Dhruva Maharaj's fear. Dhruva Maharaj again was afraid that his material desire would stop him from attaining the kingdom of God, his contamination would stop him from attaining the lotus feet of Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. How is he going to do this? Personality of Godhead continued, "My dear Dhruva, I shall award you the glowing planet known as the Pole Star, which will continue to exist even after the dissolution at the end of the millennium. No one has ever ruled this planet, which is surrounded by all the solar systems, planets and stars. All the luminaries in the sky circumambulate this planet, just as bulls tread around a central pole for the purpose of crushing grains. So this system is common in India, not so common in the land of Oz. But the bulls, they put them on a... There's a pole in the middle, and then they walk them around this pole. They put a stick of sorts, and the bulls walk around this pole and they pull a crushing wheel. I've seen this at the ISKCON Palace at Govardhan. They're using the system to crush big rocks and make them into small rocks, using for limestone, which will last 100 years at least. So as the bulls go around the post, so similarly all the planets go around the pole star, which is the north star, which you can't see from down under. But you see this in the northern hemisphere, that all the planets and all the stars go around this one planet. That's Dhruvaloka, or the north star. And it's actually a Vaikuntha planet, a spiritual planet within the material world. So that was the planet that Dhruva was given by Lord Brahma. He was giving Dhruva that planet which was in the material world, but beyond the material world, greater than the material world, greater than the universe. Lord Brahma can't even enter this planet. So in this way, the Lord is fulfilling this desire of Dhruva. Prabhupada's purport. No, we won't read that right now. Now he's going to continue with the benedictions. Maybe you can open it. After your father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, so he's giving him the pole star as his kingdom, but also after his father goes to the forest and awards you the rule of his kingdom, you will rule continuously the entire world for 36,000 years, and all your senses will continue to be as strong as they are now. You will never become old. The Lord continued. So two benedictions. You will rule this world for 36,000 years, and during that time, because you can imagine, if we rule for 100 years, 200 years, you imagine how old and wrinkled you'd get after 36,000 years, and you couldn't do anything. But Dhruva would never become old. And he would have the pole star after that as his kingdom. But it's not, these aren't the end of his benedictions. Sometime in the future, the Lord said, your brother, Uttam, will go hunting in the forest. And while absorbed in hunting, he will be killed. Your stepmother, Saruji, being maddened upon the death of her son, will go to search him out in the forest, but she will be devoured by a forest fire. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj came to the forest to search out the Supreme Personality of Godhead with a revenging spirit against his stepmother. What's his stepmother's name? Saruji. So he had that feeling of bitterness, because when someone hurts us, it is natural, it is not spiritual, but it is natural to want to get even. As one of our community members was fond of saying at one point, don't get angry, get even. Dhruva Maharaj was feeling like that. He had a vengeful attitude, some bitterness in his heart. His stepmother had insulted Dhruva, who was not an ordinary person, but a great Vaishnava. An offense at the lotus feet of a Vaishnava is the greatest offense in this world. Because of having insulted Dhruva Maharaj, Saruchi would become mad upon the death of her son and would enter a forest fire, and thus her life would be ended. This was specifically mentioned by the Lord to Dhruva because he was determined for revenge against her. From this, we should take the lesson that we should never try to insult a Vaishnava. Not only should we not insult a Vaishnava, but we should not insult anyone unnecessarily. When Saruchi insulted Dhruva Maharaj, he was just a child. She, of course, did not know that Dhruva was a great recognized Vaishnava, and so her offense was committed unknowingly. When one serves a Vaishnava unknowingly, one still gets the good results. And if one unknowingly insults a Vaishnava, one suffers the bad results. A Vaishnava is especially favored by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Pleasing him or displeasing him directly affects the pleasure and displeasure of the Supreme Lord. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his 8 stanzas of prayers to the spiritual master, has sung Yasya Prasada Bhagavat Prasada. By pleasing the spiritual master, who is a pure Vaishnava, one pleases the personality of Godhead. But if one displeases the spiritual master, one does not know where he is going. Nagati Gatopi, his destination is unknown. So that's a great lesson in this. First benediction given to Dhruva. You have the pole star as your kingdom, which is greater than the universe. Second benediction, you will live in this world and never get old as you rule. You wanted a kingdom, now you have it. 36,000 years, you will rule this. And not only that, but your stepmother who has insulted you will die as her son will also die. You held in your heart a revengeful attitude. And now, as Krishna explains in the Mahabharata, that I become, that you should know, he tells the Pandavas, that I am the enemy of those who are the enemy of my devotees. Still not over. I am the heart of all sacrifices. You will be able to perform many great sacrifices and also give great charities. In this way, you will be able to enjoy the blessings of material happiness in this life, which will go on for thousands and thousands of years. and at the time of death you will be able to remember me. So although at the time of death it's so hard to remember Krishna because of the disturbing situation within the mind, especially if we enjoy material happiness, but Dhruva Maharaj gets all this material happiness plus the ability to remember the Lord when he leaves this world, and then he attains the spiritual world within the material world, Dhruva Loka, which will be his kingdom. He will be undisturbed in remembrance of the Lord. Prabhupada explains towards the end of his purport. Our Krishna consciousness movement is designed to teach people and to learn ourselves the exact instruction of the personality of Godhead. In this way, we shall continuously perform the Sankirtan Jagya and continuously chant the Hare Krishna mantra. Then at the end of our lives, we shall certainly be able to remember Krishna, and our program of life will be successful. In this age, distribution of prasad has replaced distribution of money, because Dhruva Maharaj distributed charity, money, financial remuneration. But in this age, prasadam distribution. No one has sufficient money to distribute, but if we distribute Krishna prasad as far as possible, that this is more valuable than the distribution of money. So you will enjoy material happiness. And remember me as well when you leave this world. Text 25, with the last benediction, or the last thing. The Supreme Personality of Godhead continued, my dear Dhruva, after your material life in this body, you'll die remembering me, and therefore you will go to my planet, which has always offered obeisances by the residents of all other planetary systems. It is situated above the planets of the seven rishis, and having gone there, you will never have to come back again to this material world. Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the word Navartate is very significant. The Lord says, you will not come back to this material world, for you will reach Matstanam, my abode. Therefore, Dhruva Loka, or the pole star, is the abode of Lord Vishnu within this material world. Upon it, there is an ocean of milk. And within that ocean, there is an island known as Satadip. It is clearly indicated that this planet is situated above the seven planetary systems of the Rishis. And because this planet is Vishnu Loka, it is worshipped by all other planetary systems. It may be questioned here, what will happen to the planet known as Dhruva Loka at the time of the dissolution of this universe? The answer is simple. Dhruva Loka remains, like other Vaikuntha Lokas beyond this universe. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura has commented in this connection that the very word Navartate indicates that this planet is eternal. So the Lord, after saying this and being worshipped and honored by Dhruva Maharaj, the boy, and after offering Dhruva Maharaj his own abode of Dhruva Loka or Vishnu Loka, well, the pole star, Lord Vishnu, on the back of Garuda, returned to his abode as Dhruva Maharaj looked down. So Dhruva Maharaj, look what he achieved. Material happiness, long life, rulership over the earth for an indeterminable length of time, practically speaking, 36,000 years. Then he would still remember the Lord when he died. He would enjoy so much material happiness. And then he would gain his own planet where the Lord resides eternally within the material world of Dhruva Loka, which is greater than the universe. Greater than the kingdom of his father, greater than the kingdom even of Lord Brahma or Manu. So Dhruva attained so much. But yet, as text 27 says, despite having achieved the desired result of his determination by worshipping the lotus feet of the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj was not very pleased. Thus he returned to his home. So my family told this. to the Torah. And Vidura, upon hearing this, he asked, "My dear Brahmana, dear Maitreya, the abode of the Lord is very difficult to attain. It can be attained only by pure devotional service, which alone pleases the most affectionate, merciful Lord. Dhruva Maharaj attained this position even in one life, and he was very wise and conscientious. Why then was he not very pleased?" Maitreya began to answer. "Dhruva Maharaj's heart, which was pierced by the arrows of the harsh words of his stepmother, was greatly aggrieved, and thus when he fixed upon his goal of life, he did not forget her misbehavior. He did not demand actual liberation from this material world, but at the end of his devotional service, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appeared before him, he was simply ashamed of the material demands he had in his mind. He had ill will towards other living entities. And as a result of that, she and her son, who was Dhruva Maharaj's dear friend even, we thought were going to die." Now this purport, we won't read all of it. It's quite long, more than 3 pages. We'll read some of it. Dhruva Maharaj basically was very ashamed of his material desires. He felt terrible after seeing the Lord. Just like we may think our clothes are very clean and neat and nice, even after we have worked in the fields all day long. But then when we see someone who is dressed perfectly, properly, in fresh, clean clothes, then we feel embarrassed about our dirty, tattered garments. So similarly, after being in the association of the Lord, his own shameful consciousness was painfully clear to him. Here's the purport. This important verse has been discussed by many stalwart commentators. Why was Dhruva Maharaj not very pleased, even after achieving the goal of life he desired? A pure devotee is always free from any kind of material desires. In the material world, one's material desires are all most demonic. One thinks of others as one's enemies. One thinks of revenge against one's enemies. One aspires to become the topmost leader or the topmost person in this material world, and thus one competes with all others. This has been described in the Bhagavad Gita 16th chapter as a suruk. A pure devotee has no demands from the Lord. His only concern is to serve the Lord sincerely and seriously, and he is not at all concerned about what will happen in the future. In the Mukunda Mala Stotra, King Kulasekhar, author of the book, states in his prayer, "My dear Lord, I don't want any position of sense gratification within this material world. I simply want to engage in your service perpetually." Similarly, Lord Chaitanya in his Shikastak also prayed, "My Lord, I do not want any amount of wealth." Which verse is this? I do not want any wealth. I do not want any number of materialistic followers, nor do I want any attractive wife to enjoy. The only thing I want is that I may engage life after life in your service. Lord Chaitanya did not even pray for mukti or liberation. We'll skip a paragraph. And Dhruva Maharaj's demand was for a position so exalted that it was never enjoyed even by Lord Brahma, his great-grandfather. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is so affectionate and kind towards his devotee, especially to a devotee like Dhruva Maharaj, who went to render devotional service in the forest alone at the age of only 5 years, that although the motive might be impure, the Lord does not consider the motive. He is concerned with the service. So he gave up everything, such a young, tender age. And even though his motive was not pure, the Lord did not consider that. He just considered that he's coming to me. But if a devotee has a particular motive, the Lord directly or indirectly knows it, and therefore he does not leave the devotee's material desires unfulfilled. These are some of the special favors by the Lord to a devotee. Dhruva Maharaj was offered Dhruvaloka, a planet that was never resided upon by any conditioned soul. Even Brahma, although the topmost living creature within this universe, was not allowed to enter the Dhruvaloka. Whenever there is a crisis within this universe, the demigods go to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kiradakshai Vishnu, and they stand on the beach of the milk ocean. So the fulfillment of Dhruva Maharaj's demand, a position more exalted than that of even his great-grandfather Brahma, was offered to him. So on one side, Dhruva Maharaj was feeling very ashamed because of his material desire. It is different from pure devotional service. And on the other side, the Lord fulfilled that material desire of his. He didn't take it that this is a contamination and it's terrible and we will punish you. Not like that. He fulfilled it out of his affection. And the last, going to the last paragraph on page 441. The great sage Maitreya explained that Dhruva Maharaj did not desire in the beginning to engage in the service of the Lord, but he wanted an exalted position better than his grandfather, his great-grandfather's. This is more or less not service to the Lord, but service to the senses. Even if one gets the position of Brahma, the most exalted position in this material world, he is a conditioned soul. Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati says that if one is elevated to real pure devotional service, he considers even great demigods like Brahma and Indra to be on an equal level with an insignificant insect. It's that same verse. The reason is that an insignificant insect has a desire for sense gratification, and even a great personality like Lord Brahma also wants to dominate this material world. Sense gratification means domination over material nature. The whole competition between conditioned souls is based upon domination of this material nature. Modern scientists are proud of their knowledge because they are discovering new methods to dominate the laws of material nature. They think that this is the advancement of human civilization. The more they can dominate the material laws, the more advanced they think they are. Dhruva Maharaj's propensity in the beginning was like that. He wanted to dominate this material world in a greater position than Lord Brahma. Therefore, elsewhere it is described that after the appearance of the Lord, when Dhruva Maharaj thought and compared his determination to his final reward, he realized that he wanted a few particles of broken glass, but instead had received many diamonds. As soon as he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, he immediately became conscious of the unimportance of his demand from the Lord to have an exalted position better than Lord Brahma's. When Dhruva Maharaj became situated on the Vasudev platform due to seeing the Lord face to face, all his material contamination was cleared. Thus he became ashamed of what his demands were and what he had achieved. He was very much ashamed to think that although he had gone to Maruvan, giving up the kingdom of his father, and he had gotten a spiritual master like Narada Muni, he was still thinking of revenge against his stepmother and wanted to occupy an exalted post within this material world. These were the causes for his moroseness, even after he received all the desired benedictions from the Lord. When Dhruva Maharaj actually saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there was no question of a revengeful attitude towards his stepmother, nor any aspiration to lord it over the material world. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so kind that he knew that Dhruva Maharaj wanted these. Speaking before Dhruva Maharaj, he used the word Vedeham, because when Dhruva Maharaj demanded material benefits, the Lord was present within his heart and so knew everything. The Lord always knows everything a man is thinking. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita also, Vedaham Samatittani. The Lord fulfilled all of Dhruva Maharaj's desires. His revengeful attitude towards his stepmother and stepbrother was satisfied. His desire for a more exalted position than that of his great-grandfather was also fulfilled. And at the same time, his eternal position in Dhruva Loka was fixed. Although Dhruva Maharaj's achievement of an eternal planet was not conceived of by him, Krishna thought, what will Dhruva do with an exalted position within this material world? Therefore, he gave Dhruva the opportunity to rule this material world for 36,000 years with unchangeable senses and the chance to perform many great sacrifices and thus become the most reputed king within this material world. And after finishing with all this material enjoyment, Dhruva would be promoted to the spiritual world, which includes the Dhruva Loka. Now Dhruva's thinking is going to be described. His own words, thinking to himself after the Lord departed, is going to be described in the next six verses, and we'll read them a little bit in the way of purports, but we won't read much of the purports. Here's what Dhruva Maharaj thought to himself. To endeavor to be situated in the shade of the lotus feet of the Lord is not an ordinary task, because even the great brahmacharis headed by Sanandana, who practiced Astanga Yoga and trance, attain the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet only after many, many births. Within 6 months, I achieved the same result. Yet, due to my thinking differently from the Lord, I fell down from my position. Alas, just look at me. I am so unfortunate. I approach the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can immediately cut the chains of the repetition of birth and death. But still, out of my foolishness, I prayed for things which are perishable. So he lamented that he could have asked the Lord, he could have desired immortality, but instead, what did he desire? He desired revenge, a kingdom. Prabhupada's purport. The Vaishnava philosophy in the process of Krishna consciousness prohibits the devotees from all kinds of material aspirations. A Vaishnava devotee should always be anya bilasita sunya, free from all material aspirations for the results of fruitive activities or empiric philosophical speculation. Dhruva Maharaj was actually initiated by Narada Muni, the greatest Vaishnava. He was initiated in chanting the Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya mantra. This mantra is a Vishnu mantra, for by practicing the chanting of this mantra, one is elevated to the Vishnu Loka. Dhruva Maharaj regrets that although he was initiated in the Vishnu mantra by a Vaishnava, he still aspired for material benefits. That was another cause for lamentation. Although he got the results of the Vishnu mantra by the causeless mercy of the Lord, he lamented how foolish he was to have strived for material benefits while practicing devotional service. In other words, every one of us who is engaged in devotional service and Krishna consciousness should be completely free from all material aspirations. Otherwise, we will have to lament like Dhruva Maharaj. Text 32. Since all the demigods, Dhruva continued, who are situated in the higher planetary systems will have to come down again, they are all envious of my being elevated to Vaikuntha Loka by devotional service. These intolerant demigods have dissipated my intelligence, and only for this reason could I not accept the genuine benediction of the instructions of the sage Narada. In this purport, we'll read some of this. Dhruva Maharaj, his conclusion is that these demigods, being envious of his superior position in devotional service, conspired against him to pollute his intelligence. And thus, although he was a disciple of a great Vaishnava, Narada Muni, he could not accept Narada's valid instructions. Now Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he had neglected these instructions. Narada Muni had asked him, "Why should you bother about insult or adoration from your stepmother?" He of course said to Dhruva Maharaj that since Dhruva was only a child, what did he have to do with such insult or adoration? But Dhruva Maharaj was determined to achieve the benediction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore Narada advised him to go back home for the time being, and in mature time he could try to practice devotional service. Dhruva Maharaj regretted that he had rejected the advice of Narada Muni and was adamant in asking him for something perishable, namely revenge against his stepmother for her insult and possession of the kingdom of his father. Dhruva Maharaj regretted very much that he could not take seriously the instructions of his spiritual master and that his consciousness was therefore contaminated. Still, the Lord is so merciful that due to Dhruva's execution of devotional service, he offered Dhruva the ultimate Vaishnava goal. Dhruva Maharaj continued his lamentation, text 33. I was under the influence of the illusory energy. So actually he's not blaming the demigods. It's all their fault. Rather, the fault is that he was in Maya. What is Maya? Under the influence of the illusory energy. And what keeps us in Maya under the influence of the illusory energy? Our spirit of enjoyment. So I was under the influence of the illusory energy, being ignorant of the actual facts. I was sleeping on her lap. Under a vision of duality, I saw my brother as my enemy, and falsely I lamented within my heart, thinking, they are my enemies. So this type of illusion that we may fall into, even as devotees, immature devotees. And when we have material aspirations, then immediately we see friends and enemies. Even dear brothers become great enemies when we have material aspirations, which is caused by that enjoying spirit. It is very difficult to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in my case, although I have satisfied the supersoul of the whole universe, I have prayed only for useless things. My activities were exactly like treatment given to a person who is already dead. Just see how unfortunate I am. For in spite of meeting the Supreme Lord, who can cut one's link with birth and death, I have prayed for the same condition again. Because of my state of complete foolishness and paucity, or lack of pious activities, although the Lord offered me his personal service, I wanted material name, fame, and prosperity. My case is just like that of the poor man who, when he satisfied a great emperor who wanted to give him anything he might ask, out of ignorance, he asked only for a few broken grains of husked rice. Purport. In this verse, the words faradjam, which means complete independence, is very significant. A conditioned soul does not know what complete independence is. Complete independence means situated in one's own constitutional position. The real independence of a living entity who is part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to remain always dependent on the Supreme Lord, just like a child who plays in complete independence, guided by his parents who watch over him. The independence of the conditioned soul does not mean to fight with the obstacles offered by Maya, but it means to surrender to Krishna. In the material world, everyone is trying to become completely independent simply by fighting against the obstacles offered by Maya. This is called the struggle for existence. Real independence is to be reinstated in the service of the Lord. Anyone who goes to the Vaikuntha planets or Goloka Vrindavan planet is freely offering his service to the Lord. That is complete independence. Just contrary to this is material overlordship, which we wrongly take to be independence. Many great political leaders have tried to establish independence, but due to such so-called independence, the people's dependence has only increased. The living entity cannot be happy trying to be independent in the material world. One has to surrender, therefore, unto the lotus feet of the Lord and engage in his original eternal service. Dhruva Maharaj regrets that he wanted material opulence and greater prosperity than that of his great-grandfather Lord Brahma. Even from the Lord was like a poor man's asking a great emperor for a few grains of broken rice. The conclusion is that anyone who is engaged in the loving service of the Lord should never ask for material prosperity from the Lord. The awarding of material prosperity simply depends on the stringent rules and regulations of the external energy. Pure devotees ask the Lord only for the privilege of serving Him. This is our real independence. If we want anything else, it is a sign of our misfortune. So this point is being hammered at us again and again, specifically for devotees, those who are looking to take shelter of Krishna. What we should be desiring and what we shouldn't be desiring, this discrimination is being made for us by the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj and by the purports of Srila Prabhupada. Okay, we'll stop here. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yep.
When you were saying that about the polar star on the ocean milk, and who is that? Who is it? Garudaksha Vishnu that's there on the ocean milk? Is that the same?
No. Chiradaksha Vishnu.
Is it?
Yeah.
So he also has one and a half. Is it?
Yeah.
He is?
Yeah.
He's
in the the universe has water in it, and he's on the water of the ocean of the universe he's sitting on there on the Anantashesha.
So are we in a lotus stem then? The planetary systems?
Like that.
Uh-huh. So what is the ocean of milk then? That's the ocean of water there, isn't it?
Yeah, and then in the universe itself, in the planetary systems, above the planets of the seven sages, there is another planet that all the other planets revolve around within the universe. So if all the planets are in the lotus stem, mm-hmm. If it is like that, then Dhruvaloka is in there, but yet it's a different kind of a planet. It's a spiritual planet. It's eternal, and it does not become destroyed when the universe is destroyed, wound up again within the Lord.
So
Lord
Brahma goes and is troubling the universe, he goes to the ocean.
And the demigods, and they stand outside the shore of the ocean, and they pray, and then the Lord, they never actually see him. Lord Brahma hears the answer to his prayers in meditation. What do you think?
Oh, that's indifferent.
That's good. Yeah. Sure. So in the universe, the Lord is in Chiradakshay Vishnu is in the, he's lying down in the ocean of milk in this planet, the Svetadvipa planet. And then in the universe he's lying in the ocean of water, and outside of the universe is Karanadakshay Vishnu or Mahavishnu, he's lying in the material vast outside of the vast material energy, glancing upon it. What chapter?
It's all that in.
Yeah.
Is it the first one, the first creation?
Huh?
There's the blue one, creation.
Yeah, okay, but what chapter of the Krishna book is it somewhat described when the demigods go to the...
The first one.
Yep. They go to the... Bhumi goes. Any other questions? Yeah.
Hey, Krishna, regarding this weird Dhruva Maharaj, is that the point that the demigods taking less intelligence?
Yeah.
Obviously, he didn't want to shift any...
Playing to them, so then what would be the significance of this type of thing? What verse is that again? 32, is it? Mm-hmm. Huh? 32. He was just thinking like that. What? He was just thinking of that. He was one point in there by these thoughts. He's also subtly decrying the position of the demigods, that it is not such a wonderful position because they have to come down. And they one doesn't become envious of someone who has less than him. One becomes envious of one who has more than him. So in this way of in his criticism of the demigods, what's philosophically going on, and the point we're possibly supposed to get from it is that this planet is so wonderful that even the demigods are envious of it. They wish it. Why he's saying that at this time, I don't know. It's somehow that's part of his ecstatic lamentation. Do you know why? No. He's thinking like this at this time.
Probably may I ask? If someone's intention is genuinely devotional, will the demigods have this enmity towards them?
So sometimes it is said that they place obstacles, the demigods place obstacles in the devotees, in front of the devotees. I think it's in the 11th canto. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Some of them.
Yeah, but it's to no avail. Because Krishna takes care of the devotee. And ultimately the demigods are servants of Krishna. So they can't, there's nothing that can stop a devotee who is determined. Nothing. Because Krishna is there. Yoga Chaimam Vaham Yaham.
What if a devotee wanted to rule the whole planet just so that it would be Krishna conscious? Making
Are you thinking like that? Seriously.
Anybody who loved it?
Yeah. You have to do one thing first, and then you can do it, and that's become a Mahabhagavat. A Actually, I heard Prabhupada say that. He said it's not to rule the planet is not ordinary on behalf of Krishna, because there's such a tendency to get intoxicated by any position that we have. Or to speak of such a really powerful position. Even the demigods become intoxicated with their positions. And they're so pious, so pure. So Prabhupada said that it's not an ordinary thing to rule the planet. One, it is only for Mahabhagavats, like Prithu Maharaj. We'll be reading about Prithu Maharaj who did it. The Adiraj. So after you do that, then that. First things first. And sometimes, if we become a Mahabhagavat, we may decide it's not worth it. And just see if Krishna wants whatever Krishna wants. And just to show us what torture would be if we weren't a Mahabhagavat. Your first assignment is to organize the traffic in India.
I tried.
Therefore, you did not win your seat. Okay, you still want to organize the universe?
I didn't say I was.
Oh, you wanted to do it.
What if?
Well, that usually means that somewhere in there is a link, there's some little desire, maybe. But only if Krishna wants me to.
Someone should do it.
But you should learn how to delegate. It's proper management for this time. Sahasra will do it. He can do it very easily.
Partnership.
Huh?
Partnership.
Yeah. He can do it. Anyway, if there's an advertisement in the West Australian for you can answer it. Position required. Yeah, someone is doing it. Kali right now. How pure we have to be to take on any position, really. What to speak of something like that. How pure we have to be. Pure means humble too, and understand that we can't do anything other than Krishna. Power coming through us. We'll later see the moods of some of the great rulers, like Prithu Maharaj, like Ambarish Maharaj. Ambarish Maharaj was the one, or Runti Dev. So humble, incredible. After Ambarish Maharaj, when he was Durvasa Muni tried to kill him, he was angry at him, really, for no reason. And then the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord was protecting Ambarish Maharaj, and it chased Durvasa Muni all over the universe for so many years. And then when he came back after talking to Lord Vishnu, Durvasa Muni said, only the devotee, Ambarish, if he forgives you, everything will be okay. So he came before Ambarish, Durvasa Muni, and begging him for shelter and for forgiveness. And Ambarish Maharaj was surprised at his own power. He was unaware of it. He was so humble. Any other questions or comments? Yeah.
Maharaj, which
form of the Lord's present under the Lord's? It's probably this Krishna garba, like that. It's a Vishnu form, it seems. Because that's his worshipful deity. Four arms, Vishnu loka. Yeah. Any other? Yeah.
So maybe Guru Maharaj, who the Devadatta?
Later. After he ruled this earth for 36,000 years, and then he left this world remembering the Lord, and then he goes to Dhruvaloka and rules there as like the he's like the president, the in charge.
So who was ruling there?
No one. He was just waiting. So it's directly described that the Lord doesn't need anyone to rule. He was just, when there was no one, no president.
Did he rule to anybody?
That's what it indicates.
Nobody came after
him. Yep. That's what it indicates. There may be some subtleties in there that I'm not aware of, but that's the basic indication. Yeah.
Talking about the demigods creating disturbances, I even heard the statement that sometimes Narada Muni is stirring things up between devotees. Is there any, have you heard anything to this?
Well, he definitely stirs things up, and that's to make the pastime happen.
So,
yeah, he has a particular, unique position in the different leelas.
So we should blame Narada Muni for lots of things that happen.
But the other verses says we should be very careful not to insult Vaishnavas. Why? Do you mean things that happened between us? Narada Muni made me do it.
It's
Narada Muni's fault. That's new. That might go places. Nowadays, yeah.
So there is. I mean, that wasn't a speculation by someone. That's all I want to know.
Huh? Yes,
right.
It is. Usually, it's Maya that causes the problems for us. It's not Narada Muni. It's not pastimes. It's just simply our desire to be the center of existence. That's the problem. Yeah, this is, you can't say this is the problems that we have on Leela. Okay, we'll stop here. So we'll continue, if Krishna allows, next Wednesday. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Dhruva Maharaj ki jai. Narada Muni ki jai.